Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors. Welcome to the PI World 2020 Roundup of the Year. And today we're with Paul Scott, who's a professional investor and the writer of the Stockopedia Small Cap Value Report. And we were together back in May 2020 when, Paul, you played it very well and had made very good returns. So how's the rest of the year played out for you? And what's your return to date so far? Well, at this end of the year?
Well, hi, Tamsin, and hi, everybody listening in. So, yeah, May was probably the short-term high for me. I hedged my portfolio in January and February because I didn't want to sell a lot of illiquid small caps, but I did see the risk of the pandemic coming. So I had that did pretty well. And then I switched long in late March. So that went very well. So by May, things were really motoring along. But I'm afraid I did give quite a lot of that back over the summer. I got it into my head that after that rally in May and June, that we could have another leg down. Because the trouble was, all the news that we were getting about the economy and the pandemic was all so dire, wasn't it, really, over that period. That I couldn't see any alternative to the markets, maybe not retesting the lows again, but giving the rebound seemed so extreme, particularly in America, that so I gave a lot back over the summer. It was the worst scenario, really, where my short positions just kept losing money, and I kept adding to them, when I got stopped out and so on from the indices. But my long positions were losing money as well, because a lot of them were small illiquid things which seemed to grind down over the summer and the early autumn. But then obviously when the I gave up shorting by about July or August, I just thought, this is not working, stop doing it. So it's not about what we think the market should be doing. At some point you really have to look at what's actually happening and react accordingly. So I was long only when the vaccine news came through, and really, I mean, the gains in the last few weeks I think have been, for most of us, have been pretty spectacular and largely indiscriminate. It's been a sort of, everything has rallied, as just a ton of cash on the sidelines, I think, just went into these things. So I think you've got to be careful. All of us have to be careful not to think we're genius stock pickers just because something we're in has gone up 50% in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Because you look at the charts of most of these things, they all look virtually identical. Mm. Everything's rallied, everything's cyclical anyway. So as things stand now, it's been a good year. So I can't complain. Yeah.
Performance year to date?
My SIP is probably, I don't know, is the honest answer, but my SIP is probably about flat. That's sort of long-term small cap positions. Those are, that got hit by big positions in French Connection and Revolution Bars. Obviously, retail and COVID had been a disaster. But offset against that, I had two good winners, in particular, Best of the Best, BOTB, a stock I know you and I both like very much. That was very, very good. That was in a 12 bagger in my SIP, because I've held it for quite a few years. So that was very good. And what was the other one I said? Oh, Interseed has been pretty good as well. So they sort of offset. So my SIP was roughly flat for the year, but my my geared accounts, I mean, I wouldn't want to give a figure, but it's very good. But it's very volatile. That's the point. So, because a lot of the positions are geared 3 or 4 to 1, it could fall out of bed very badly any time, So I don't want to tempt fate by bragging.
So what's very good? More than 20%, more than 50%, more than
60%.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you give it back so easily. That's not, it's not something I would want to hang my hat on.
Wow. Okay, so you've given a few real winners.
Are there any others that you that have really driven that performance, particularly in the geared accounts, that you bought into, it executed exactly as you planned or even better than when you bought in? The strategy was followed and executed impeccably.
Not really. Being brutally honest, the gains mainly came from the hedging. It was really just some... I say that the hedging allowed me to keep everything open on my long side through that huge market plunge. So I think that was the main benefit of it. And a lot of people on my blog say to me, what on earth did you hold Revolution Bars all the way down from a pound down to 9p? And then the answer is because I was more than fully hedged. So that was the strategy that I went into the pandemic with. So it didn't really matter to me that it dropped 90% because the hedge covered that two or three times over. So it was an unusual strategy, but it did work. So it wasn't particularly down to good stock picking, the performance this year, I have to say. It was more the fact that I was able to hold my positions because I had that hedge in place. But I mean, we discussed this in the small cap report, I think it was the right at the end of January, me and Graham Neary, who was co-writing with me at the time, he's now got his own website, we were discussing the various strategies, and Graham said, I'm going to just ride this out, I'm not geared, and that strategy worked great for him. I said, well, I am geared, so I'm going to ride it out with my longs and put on corresponding or even larger shorts to hedge. And as it turned out, both of our very different strategies both worked. So that was pretty good.
And what did you hedge with?
Just index shorts. I mean, I know there's no correlation directly with UK small caps and the US indices I always use as a hedge. And you could say, well, that's ridiculous. They're not correlated. But they really are. They're quite closely correlated, I feel, enough to make it something to hedge against. And I think in a way, those indices are quite volatile because there are so many people playing the futures. You know, I mean, I remember vividly in March and, well, February, March and April, really, there were 1,000-point intraday swings or 1,500 on the Dow quite routinely every day. You know, and if you were nimble and just going in and out of that, you could actually make quite good money, which is not what I meant to do, but I just took a view, look, if I see an opportunity, I'll do it. And then when it stopped working and I started hemorrhaging cash doing that, I stopped.
So it's been a crazy year. What didn't go so well and what did you learn from that?
What didn't go so well? I think it was that a lot of these really quite small and illiquid things that I'm in, my sort of longer term positions that I've done in quite a few of them I've had for several years, they can fall a lot further than you think possible or even rational. That's one of the things I learned from this year. I mean, I know that already because I've been through the 2000 to 2003 bear market and the 2008-09 bear market. But the point is, there's valuations just detach from reality for a while when it's all about liquidity, isn't it? And if people are just panic selling, if people haven't done their sums on some of these things and think they're going to go bust and run out of cash when actually if you work the numbers through on a spreadsheet, they're not, they'll just sell at any price. So, and that caused me quite a few headaches, I have to say, this year. At one point I did have to sell some of my Revolution bars because I was just getting such enormous margin calls. You know, I couldn't justify selling other things that were safer to fund these awful losses on Revolution Bars. Although I did manage to buy some of them, quite a lot of those back on the day when Rishi Sunak announced the extension of the furlough scheme to the end of March, because that was very crucial to bars and restaurants, because it means they could, if they had enough cash to just cover the rents, they could survive until, in all likelihood, COVID's in retreat.
So any learnings from that experience?
Definitely. I mean, it's just it's relearning all the old mistakes, isn't it, really? I mean, we never stop learning, do we? We just keep making the same mistakes over and over. Because after sort of 7 or 8 years of a bull market, you forget a lot of the things that... So I think it's brought things that I knew from 2008-09 back into my... The front of my mind. I mean, one thing I would mention with Revolution Bars is that last time we spoke, it had just announced extended bank facilities guaranteed by the government, and it looked like they were home and dry. And I think I was crowing about that on here because they'd shot up from, I don't know, whatever, 18p to up to about 35, 37p. So I was feeling very smug. Well, literally a day or two later, they announced a 20p placing. So one of the things I learned from that is just because a company gets support from its bank and looks like it's home and dry, there can often be in the background a sort of written or unwritten agreement, undisclosed, that the company will also do an equity fundraising. And I think that's what happened there. So that one sort of bit me on the bum, which serves me right for getting cocky.
And looking forward to 2021, what holding are you most bullish about?
Oh, without a doubt, and by far my biggest holding is Boohoo.com, ticker B-double-O. Obviously, everybody knows it's been this ESG scandal recently, which has been dealt with, in my view, more than satisfactorily. They've appointed Brian Leifson, who did the famous Leifson inquiry, into the press and so on. Extremely eminent judge. He's been appointed. KPMG being appointed. You know, they absolutely belt and braces addressed all these issues. And I think what's interesting about that is that a lot of funds, I think, have kind of become forced sellers because ESG is now such a big deal that nobody wants, or a lot of fund managers don't want Boohoo on their end of year portfolio list. So this has created, in my view, just a fantastic buying opportunity because it's a stunning business that's doing incredibly well. The interims beat expectations. Earnings forecasts are being upgraded. It's gone from a penny a share EPS to a forecast this year of 10p. So tenfold increase in earnings per share in about 5 or 6 years, all organic, other than that they buy brands quite cheaply and then bolt them onto the machine. They've now got 9 brands, which are all doing well. They'll be acquiring more. You know, I mean, they might get some of the Philip Green brands possibly, but I don't think they're that bothered because they've all basically beaten them already. That's why Arcadia's gone bust. So why buy up? You know, I don't think they'll overpay for the brands if they do get them. The other thing, I think the other angle on it, well, it's on probably about 25 times forecast earnings now, which I think for a company that has this basically exponential growth, open-ended, selling internationally. Sales in America are up 83% now. That's now their second biggest market. They're not that reliant on the EU, so even if we get no deal EU exit, that doesn't really matter. If you strip away the ESG stuff, I think this stock would be at least double where it is now. And longer term, I've got a price target of £10 plus on it. It's £3 now. This, for me, is just a buy and hold forever now. I'm not interested in trading it. I can't see why I would want to hold anything else in equivalent size, because this company is just so much better, in my opinion, than practically everything else on the market. And I think the other interesting angle on this ESG business is that it will probably only take a few months before the market realizes that actually they're deadly serious about addressing and repairing all these issues, which are with their suppliers, remember, not with Boohoo itself. And the independent legal report that's already been published in full said that Boohoo was not guilty of, you know, it wasn't deliberately profiting or deliberately using suppliers that were breaking the law on minimum wage and allegedly, according to the BBC, VAT fraud and so on. But they're saying that, you know, Boohoo should have investigated more closely and should have, which is a fair comment. I think it's the growing pains of a very small private business that, you know, wouldn't think it's even remotely its job to police its suppliers, to now a very substantial multinational, high profile business that has realized now and properly realized they've got to make sure everything's squeaky clean. And I mean, as I talk to them occasionally, I just said, you know, list on NASDAQ. you know, you're not getting a sensible rating here in the UK. There's a company, a UK-based business called Farfetch, which is similar size to Boohoo in revenue, growing, I think, about the same rate, massively loss-making, and it's valued at about five times what Boohoo is on the New York stock market. So it's an obvious no-brainer to me for Boohoo just to say, thanks very much, the UK, you're not giving us a sensible rating, we're going to list in America. And, you know, if that happens, I mean, what, the price could double overnight, and, you know, you'll be smelling a lot of burnt bears. Short sellers have also tried to attack Boohoo totally spuriously, I think. There's nothing in the shorting report that made any sense at all, to my mind. So yeah, that I probably couldn't be more bullish on that one. I think it's a fantastic business.
What do management say when you've discussed with them listing on it, on NASDAQ?
Oh, I mean, they can't say anything, can they? So I just got a sort of, oh, we always look at all options available, or something like that. So yeah, no, I mean, they're pretty good. They don't tell me anything they shouldn't. So, and I wouldn't want them to, because that would then make me an insider, which means I wouldn't be able to buy or sell. So, you know, I never want companies to tell me anything inside. It's just, you know, it's too, I want to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, that's tremendous. I hope that we can catch up again with you in 2021. And yeah, thanks very, very much indeed. And wishing you a very happy and prosperous 2021. And likewise to all the listeners. And as I've mentioned, we've got this interview roundup series with our top guests from 2020. And you can find them all at piworld.co.uk. And great. Thank you very much,
Christmas,
Paul.
To you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.